Welcome back, everyone. This is the Prepared Mindset Podcast. We have a great, great episode lined up for you this week. I'm your host, Austin. Appreciate you guys all dropping in to join me here as this is going to be another first. It's going to be a first on the list of things that we've been able to do on this podcast, and that is actually talk to somebody who has made their mark on the world outside of the shooting industry, at large, right? You know, military, that old chestnut, right? But getting to actually sit down and talk with somebody who's also musically inclined. You guys have listened to this podcast for a while, and maybe if you haven't, I'm going to tell you right now. So you're not missing anything. You don't need to go back unless you want to. You guys should always go check out our library of discussions. It is really, really cool that we are rapidly approaching episode number 300 and the 5-year mark of the Prepared Mindset Podcast. But my life, largely in my early 20s, was revolving around music, specifically marching music, marching band, that kind of thing. It's very, very geeky, very nerdy, more athletic than many of you would give it credit for. And if you don't believe me, I want you to go YouTube search DCI drumline or WGI drumline and go see what that is. And you guys get at least some idea as to what I'm talking about here. But in terms of music, it was a huge part of my life, and it actually taught me a whole heck of a lot about work ethic and how to think about things and how to deal with problems and problem solving in a group setting. It was basically the most formative part of my life as a young adult up until I really got into the workforce and started, professional development and career oriented things like that, learning about how to communicate better, learning on how to work in a team setting across, broad, sweeping, intricate ideas, things like that. But my guest this week is Mr. Cameron Perry of the band Attack Attack, which some of you guys may know. I was talking about this with John, and all the jokes, right, came pouring out because he was into that band and that kind of music and stuff like that when he was in high school. So the whole like, it's not a phase, it's a lifestyle or something like that. I'm actually going to butcher it. He's going to listen to this. He told me he's going to listen to it, and he's going to crush me for not being able to remember that because I made fun of him. But it's really going to be an interesting discussion because Cam not only has a musical background, right, since I did indoor band and he was like an actual like music artist recognized across the world, we're both obviously tremendous successes. But it's going to be really cool because he actually does shoot and does train and does engage in the community and those things, in his free time. And it's a very interesting and very unique parallel between the two of us, but an overlap there that I think is going to make for one heck of an interesting conversation, and one that frankly, I've been looking forward to for several weeks since Cam and I were able to get this one on the books. Now, before I can get over to the conversation with Mr. Perry, I need to say thank you to a couple of folks. We have some supporting sponsors here at The Prepared Mindset that help make this content possible on a week-to-week basis. Some companies that we work with, they're tremendously supportive, either through, through products and promotion, things like that, the whole sponsor bit. So we're going to start off first by saying thank you very much to our friends at Custom Night Vision. You guys head on over to their website. It's customnightvision.com. And I urge you guys to take a look at all the great items and all the great units that they have in stock on the website. As soon as you get to the homepage, there's two buttons right there. You can pick. What are you looking for? Monocular, one tube, or binocular, two tubes. And it's a different flavor for each person. It's not always about money. Some people really, really love the PVS-14. Some guys are really into bridging, thermals and a single night vision device. You can go a monocular that route. They also sell thermals at Custom, or you can go with binocular, right? A lot of guys think the only way you can do night vision is dual tubes, which is incorrect. I will adamantly disagree with that point. I loved running a PVS-14. I just do happen to love running dual tubes more, and whatever you're looking for. So if it's a PVS-14 single tube or a Tonto, all that good stuff out there on the market for single tube devices, or if you're looking for duals. So something like the MH1 from our friends over at Low Light Innovations, Claude and his team did a fantastic job with that unit, and there's a lot of developments coming out to support that. Or something like the Manticore from the folks at Nocturne, or maybe you want some 31s from L3, you guys can go head on over to customnightvision.com. You can pick up a set of those. And if you have questions, right, you have no idea what any of what I just said means. You don't know. You've heard that it has to be Gen 3. What the hell is Gen 3? It has to be white. You don't know what the color means or why it matters. Fear not, you guys, there is a chat function. There's a little icon in that lower right-hand corner of CustomNightVision.com. And through there, you can reach out via the chat function to talk to one of the Custom Night Vision team members, whether that's Trevor or Kevin or maybe even Ben. You can ask them all the questions that are, you know, just rattling around in your dome right now. You know, green phosphor, what's FOM, white phosphor, who's L-bit, why does L3 make the best tubes? Are they really the best tubes? Am I going to have a subpar performance with them? Whatever the case may be, right? Head on over to CustomNightVision.com, you guys. Check it all out for yourself and get some freaking night vision because it is the superpower that you can buy. Also, a big thank you to the folks at American Defense Manufacturing, you guys. They were nice enough. They sent us out an upper receiver and a couple of scope mounts. I'd actually been running the scope mounts for several years now, and they're awesome. Absolutely love them. Had one of their T2 mounts. Very rugged, very durable, very reliable, you guys. Their website is admfg.com. So you can head to the website. You can check out all the mounts for yourselves, whether it's a riser for your EOTech or EOTech and magnifier. If you're looking to, you know, you heard some of our earlier ad reads, right? You want to pick up the enhanced mount for your LS series of Hollow Sun laser. You can go search for that. You can find that for yourself, and you can fix that nagging issue with the Hollow Suns, basically just wanting to pop off of the rail all the time. Or maybe if you're looking for one very rugged, very outstanding, well-built rifle, they make some great ambidextrous lower receivers. You can pick those up. Their Mod 2 upper receivers and 223 Wild are outstanding. They come with Criterion barrels, Raptor charging handles, you guys. Again, it is admfg.com. Head on over to the website and pick one up for yourself. Also, thank you to the team at Orion Training Group, you guys. Their website, because they do have one, it is the most common question Jared gets. It's OrionTrainingGroup.com. And you can head over to the website. You can get to check out the bios, right? You want to know what the entire team over at Orion, who are they? What do they do? What have they done? I think that's still, in today's day and age, one of the most important questions and concerns people have. And to some degree, rightfully so, right? Who is my instructor? Where did they come from? What did they do? So you know where their curriculum's coming from, where their perspective is coming from, if that's somebody you want to learn from. Again, it's OrionTrainingGroup.com. All the instructor bios, and most importantly, they have their entire course list and course calendar available listed there, up to date, or as updated as it can be, as some things, you know, are still being worked on for the 2025 calendar year. They're going to be back up here in Michigan. We're really looking forward to having Jared and Jason back. We were just completely blown away with the 3-day structure clearance course that they provided for us up here in Michigan in 2024. Going to be great. Another great experience. Really looking forward to it, you guys. One more time, it is OrionTrainingGroup.com. Go check it out for yourselves and see what it's all about. And lastly here, but certainly not least, 100 Concepts, you guys. And I just had an outstanding conversation on the phone today with Jonah. He is one of the owners of 100 Concepts. And man, I am excited. They are a fantastic company and they have some really, really good things planned, some big things planned for 2025 in terms of product releases, in terms of cross collaborations. If you guys haven't been on the website recently, it's 100concepts.com. They now carry the line of Surefire weapon lights. And when you purchase said weapon light, it actually comes with a free light cap. So the light caps, which put them on the market and made them stand out and what really helped this company launch, you're going to get one of those for free. And you guys, if you're looking for light caps for your other lights, maybe you have something, you know, like a Malkoff head or something from Mod Light, right? You can use their search function in the site, figure out what the right size is for you, pick yourself up one of their new ruggedized light caps, their scope caps, all kinds of really good stuff. All right. They're a fantastic company. Their motto, do good, be dangerous, live free. Love those guys. Love the company. Check it out for yourselves, you guys. It's 100concepts.com. So, like I said, this week's guest is Mr. Cameron Perry. I'm really looking forward to this. This is what we do it for, you know, you guys. These are the cool, interesting discussions we get to have when things in the outside world, you know, things like Canadian tariffs and all the media garbage and Senate appointments and stuff for, you know, secretaries of defense and whatnot. When all that crap and crud is going on out there in the world and the economy's doing the things that it does, and maybe you got some stuff going on with your family and the Super Bowl sucks because nobody wants to see the Eagles or the Chiefs win another one, we got stuff like this. We got rad conversations with outstanding individuals talking about stuff we actually care about, music and guns. It's going to be a really, really good time, you guys. Like I said, been very much looking forward to this, very much excited to get into this discussion. And at that, I am going to cut it here and jump on over to my conversation with Cam. Here we go. Cam, welcome to the Prepared Mindset, sir. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good, brother. I've been looking forward to this discussion just because I don't get to talk a lot of music when I sit down and interview people. I feel like I've found a lot of people in the community, right, that have music as an interest, yep, but not to the degree where maybe somebody like yourself might. Or like, I spent a lot of time, I talked about this in the intro, so I don't really want to like rehash it, but I spent a lot of time doing like marching band type stuff and teaching it through like my early 20s and everything. So big part of my life in a completely different way, I'm assuming. But it's cool to run into somebody who actually shares the interests and things like that. So I think this will be a very unique opportunity. And with that, can you go ahead and I'll ask you if you can introduce yourself to the audience and kind of talk a little bit about who you are, your background, and kind of what you do.
Yeah. My name's Cameron. I play in Attack. I play bass. I've been with them since like 2020 when they decided to do the comeback. Before that, I've played in several other touring bands for like the past 10 years. I shoot pretty regularly. I dry fire like every day, and then I try to hit up as many USPSA competitions as I can. Not the best shooter, I'm not the worst shooter. I always like to say I'm like I could probably do like B class on a good day. But I really enjoy it. I also do photo and video work in both industries. So I'll like do stuff with firearms and also I work with a lot of bands as well.
How'd you get started? Like, I mean, to make it into a band that actually has some kind of like national renown to them. And obviously Attack was really big for several years and everything. How did was this something you just started in high school, or what got you interested?
Yeah, I think I'm trying to remember how old I was. I was 12 or 13. I was living in Virginia. My dad's military, so we moved all over the place, but we were in Virginia at the time, and he was stationed in Yorktown. So I started doing stuff with the Fife and Drum Corps in Yorktown.
Oh,
so
wow,
I
no
played
shit. Okay.
I played snare drum with them for a few years, and then I probably didn't really mess around with playing music after that, after probably I think I was 13 or 14 years old. But I like loved music, so I was always like super into like all those bands, like Under Oath and Attack, and I'm trying to think, like I got later into like Slipknot and Limp Bizkit, Linkin Park, like all the nu metal stuff. But I loved music. And then in high school, I was probably 16 or 17. My friend was like, "You should play bass for my band." And I was like, "I don't know how to play bass, but I could probably figure it out." And he's like, "Yeah, dude, you can figure it out easy." And I was like, "Okay." So that's my friend just asked me to play bass for his band, and that's how it happened. And then he was the he ended up being the
the storyline to the South Park episode where Cartman formed a Christian rock band is how you figured out how to play.
Exactly.
You can do it, man. Trust me.
Yeah, you'll figure it out. It's not that hard.
That's awesome. So, I mean, and for me, when I had to like, so I don't think I was very talented at it. Like, I had to work pretty hard to figure out a lot of the music stuff. Like, once I would get something, I was fine. But there were some cats, dude, like musically that just picked stuff up and were just like, yeah, this is no problem. Like, I got it, man. I'm just insanely talented.
Yeah.
Where would you put yourself on one side or the other?
Probably closer to the middle. I feel like I can play most things, and I can get by with it. But because I know so many people that are so talented that like, it's just insane the level that they're on. And I'm like, yo, that's not me. But like, I have a friend who's like the best guitar player I've ever known in my whole life, and he's never actually owned a guitar. Like he just has always
What?
picked up, he's just always picked up somebody else's or borrowed somebody else's, but he's never bought and owned a guitar. But he's insane at guitar.
That's in, I mean, yeah, some people, I think with those kinds of things, it just clicks mentally. That's like you'll find guys, right, that they can shoot too, right? Where they never seem to, I mean, they were not, it's not like they just woke up and were good at it, but they never really seem to go through that struggle phase, because it just clicks in their brain.
They never had like the hiccups of just like a bad grip or like jerking the trigger, just they never had the hiccups, and it's just like, oh, you just missed that whole phase of
Yeah, it's like people
learning.
who like what you just like get to skip your puberty phase and go from not knowing a damn thing to being good. Yeah, I mean it did teach me a lot, and I'd ask I'm gonna ask what maybe what your experience was like, at least drawing parallels, right? Looking at like, because I feel like some people, and maybe you can talk more on this, is they think that you being a musician, you get into a band or something and it's just all like good times and everything. There's a lot of work that goes into understanding music, understanding the cues that go behind it. I don't want to, I mean, I guess I could get pretty technical with it, but there's a lot of practice that goes into understanding A, how to read music, how to play along with other people, how to understand different styles of music, just because that just a stylistic change can shift kind of everything that you do. Like, how was that like for you from a practice perspective? Were you like you mentioned earlier, you dry fire every day. Was that kind of when you were really learning how to pick up bass guitar and things, was that one of those like similar, it's almost like an obsessive part of your life, when you find something, you're just like really enamored with it and you just want to do it as much as you can to get better.
And especially with playing music in a band, because like when I first started picking it up, I had a friend who was really good at guitar, and so he gave me some lessons, and we just every day I would like do whatever he told me to do, and I just didn't want to embarrass myself on stage, so I was like, I have to get like to a
The
certain
real
level
fear.
before I
Yeah.
embarrass myself on stage. So like
There's.
yeah, with like shooting, it's a little different. Like going to a competition, like you could embarrass yourself in front of people, but like I don't know. I feel like most it's like going to the gym. Most of those people like aren't looking at you. Like they don't really they're waiting for their turn to shoot. Like they're not like watching your every move. They might be watching you, or you might like catch their attention, like if you do something really well, but like or really bad, but it's a little different than playing on stage.
Yeah, I mean, it's a, yeah, that's a definitely, it's a common, I think, idea or misconception people have, right? That everyone's watching you. And realistically, that's usually not the case unless you're actually, on a stage performing, which I've only really done a stage, I think, maybe a handful of times. No. The most notable one here, and you like I'll be able to hear people collectively like rolling their eyes. So I did marching percussion. So like you
Nice.
mentioned, fife and drum, which is cool. I played the snare drum. So as I was doing like competitive indoor drumline in my like early 20s, I was also a member of the Detroit Lions drumline. So
Nice, damn.
yeah, there was a Thanksgiving game halftime show that Nickelback headlined. And
Nice.
we were part of that experience. And
Nice.
you'll appreciate this story. So we rehearsed with the United Way people for probably a collective 13 hours between 2 days. It was like a Tuesday and Wednesday. And Nickelback was only there for 45 minutes. They basically came in at the beginning of the second day. They did like a sound check and everything, and then they just like split. And we're like, oh, cool. So we're not doing any like full runs together. That's sick, man. That's good stuff. And I remember we were like the way they'd like, produce this whole thing, we're all like hiding behind the stage and everything. And the guy from United Way comes up to us. He's like, all right, so you guys are gonna come out on both sides of the stage and you have 54 eight counts until you come out. I was like, what the fuck is an eight count? And he looks at me, he goes, "You have 54, you count to eight, you have 54 eight counts to come out of the stage." And I go, "Oh, so we have 108 measures until we enter." He goes, "I don't know what you just said. I know you have 54 eight counts." I'm like, "All right, well,
Oh,
this is gonna
man.
suck." And
Yeah.
it was terrible. And if any, I mean, I would urge anybody listening to this, pause this shit, go look up that performance from that halftime show, the mics, the lip syncing and everything, it all cut out. It was a bloody shit show, man.
Oh, man. That's wild.
It was terrible. And I'm like, yep, this reaffirms a lot of the ways that people feel about Nickelback. This is, I mean, tremendously successful band, right? And I'm sure they're nice guys. I don't, have you ever met them? I don't know.
No, I haven't, but I know they're huge and
Yeah. It's actually one of the guys in the drumline at the time with me, his roommate, they went to Eastern Michigan with, launched an online petition. I think he got like almost 30,000 signatures, like petitioning Nickelback as our halftime show. It was really bad. It
dang.
was a really fucking rough experience, brother. I love it for the story, but man, I will
Yeah.
get that like 13 or 14 hours of my life back of just like wasted time just sitting there, like, you know, where you, I mean, because we were just at a point just professionally, right, where we could you look at everything they're asking you to do, like, dude, I could have had this done in 2 hours, and we spent seven times that because people are just dumb.
It's, yeah, that sounds like the entertainment industry as a whole. It doesn't, it never changes.
You guys deal with a lot of that kind of stuff, like I don't know if touring or at shows or anything, where it's just, you know, it's just rough because people just have no idea what they're doing, but they think they do.
Yes, yeah, that is a very common theme. I know the one time that's most memorable, there was a promoter. I don't remember where the show was or anything, but there was a promoter who, usually in the contract, there's something that runs ads. Like there's a budget for ads so that like people can find out about the show. And a lot of promoters like don't know how to run ads, or they don't do it well. So we offer like, well, like yo, like our manager is like a social media god. Like just give him the money and he will do the ads. Like
He'll take care of it.
you're already gonna spend the money. He'll do the ads and he'll do them better. And sometimes the promoters are like, sick, less work for me, like I'm down. And other times promoters are like, no, I got this. And I guess this guy said, no, I got this. Like, I don't want to send you the money and have you do it. He was running ads worldwide for our show in one specific city. So like people in like Pakistan and like Saudi Arabia are getting ads for a show in America. And
Oh, fuck. Okay.
we're like, why? Why did you do this? You screwed yourself and us.
That's.
Yeah,
Come on, man.
it never ends.
Yeah, I know the type too. Like, I can still remember the guy from the United, and like United Way, good organization, good people. I don't want to say a whole bunch of terrible shit about it, but like, man, I really hope they moved on from that guy, because it was rough. But yeah, I mean, you want to, like, I think when you're talking about practicing, we used to talk about it. We were like, for moments like that, right? Because we did it competitively and everything, so you were judged, you were scored. But something that always stuck with me, and it's carried with me now even till like into dry fire or reps and drills and classes and things, is you don't want to, like, practice this stuff, right? Whether it's music or shooting or anything, you don't want to practice it to get it right. Like, you want to practice this until you can't get it wrong. And in either regard, that's, and people don't even, I think, have a real appreciation for it until they start really committing themselves to whatever endeavor in life, right? That's a lot of time. It's a lot of energy, and it's a lot of attention to detail. What's that like? I mean, like, for, like, on the professional music side of it, where there's like a lot of money rolled up into it, right? Like, you mentioned, like, for promotion, and you know, if something goes bad, like, we've seen stuff in headlines where, like, here it was Dave Chappelle, I think, like 3 years ago, he was totally wasted on stage and people got pissed because he wouldn't refund them. And, you know, there's a professionalism that's expected there. What is that like from a practice perspective for you guys?
Typically, like I kind of dry fire is kind of like practice, I guess, for like music. Like that's kind of how I can relate it to shooting. So like, I really don't pick my bass up every day. I mean, I probably would be way better if I did, but like I'll pick it up maybe once a week, and I'll just like fart around. And then like when we're a month or 2 months before we have to do a tour or like a run or a festival or something, then I'll pick it up as often as I can. Like if it's every day, it's every day. If it's every other day, it just depends on like what am I doing during the day or my schedule. I'll try to make time to pick it up every day and like run through the set and just like hammer the set down by myself. And then we usually all get together like a week before we leave, and then we do rehearsals for like that week, and we'll run through the set a couple of times a day for 4 to 7 days before we leave.
So how long do those rehearsals usually last then, if it's a couple of times through the set?
It depends on the set. It could the whole rehearsal time in general is probably between 2 and 4 or 5 hours, depending on like the set and depending on how distracted we get or how many cigarette breaks everyone needs.
Right. And it's people hear that too, and they're like, I could never do, I mean, anything for 5 hours straight, you know? And man, it's different. Like when I used to do stuff, again, we were competitive, so it was different, and we only got together on the weekends. But like we'd do like 5 hours on Friday and then like 14 hours on Saturday and
Oh my
another 5 hours
goodness.
on Sunday. And
Dang.
it was just what you, well, I mean, 'cause you're trying to get 40 people to do something together, you know, extremely
Yeah.
choreographed. And it's cool when you can see what people are capable of doing, but it's a lot of work. Like you guys
Yeah.
are, it's, I don't want to say it's easier, it's just different because there's, how many people are in the band? Five?
Four.
Four. Okay. I'm sorry. Yeah, four. So if you scale that, yeah, you know, it makes sense why we had to do it. Well, we were also, there's an age limit. We're also like, we were retarded, like college kids. So like limited attention spans, that you really, they, the staff did a great job. They really had to work around how stupid we could be sometimes. And they're like, do you guys, what don't you understand? It's your left foot, like left, like what, that kind of shit.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work, man. And then, you know, once you get into it and you can, you're just getting that maintenance phase. That's actually kind of the comfortable part, I feel like anyways, right? You're kind of in a groove. And
Yeah.
like you don't have to pick up the instrument every day. You're just kind of making sure you're not losing a step.
Yeah, that's I love getting in that groove. It's really nice when we won't do just one show anymore. Like we'll do if we have a festival, we'll route dates to the festival so we have like a week of dates so that we have like they're not practice runs because they're shows and it's the real deal, but like we're still kind of getting back into that groove of like doing this every day. So I love when we have
It's
like a full 5 or 6 week long tour, like, and it everything just starts rolling. Like, it's just like muscle memory.
yeah, and by the end of it, everything just feels right. It's you're just in a good place with it. Yeah. Yeah, we used to do that stuff. It used to piss me off because we would have like a performance at like 7:30 at night, right? And for and I would talk to buddies that were in other groups and stuff, and they're like, yeah, they let us, you know, it's a show day, we're gonna sleep in, you know, we're not gonna start till lunchtime or later or something. And like on show days, our directors used to have us there earlier. They're like, you need to be at the school at, you know, at the high school we rehearsed at, like 7 a.m. I was like, dude, that's 12 hours, like what the hell. We would rehearse for like 8 hours and then like, here, we bought you a Little Caesars, now eat some pizza, back up the truck, and we're gonna go. I was like, damn, man. But I took a lot out of it, you know. If you can deal with that shit, like you can deal with almost anything. And those guys are great at what they do. But you know, talking about like how that transitioned over into shooting, at least for me, like where you mentioned dry fire, right, and stuff. The way I approach dry fire now is so similar to how we used to like approach music, where we, if there was just one section of, you know, the tune that just completely sucked balls or it kept falling apart every time, like how to isolate, how to have the patience to break things down, how to just have like the mental strength, right, to do, you know, the same 5 second thing over like 100 times, you know, until you figure out and fix whatever that issue is, you know.
That's, I mean, it's the same with music. If there's like a section that I'm having trouble with or like trying to learn something, I'll try to do it full speed at first, but if I'm like really having trouble with it, I can slow it down and then just like go through it slow and then just loop it and then get to full speed and then loop it and then just hammer it in your brain, basically.
Yeah, like I said,
Which
until
is,
you can't get it wrong.
yeah.
That and that's, you see some guys like Travis Haley talk about that with shooting, and they and I saw a video years ago of him working with a metronome on like an L Prez drill or something, and I was like, dude, I could do that. Like that's, I could totally do that shit. I still can't shoot like Travis can, but I have dry fired with a metronome before, so I'm
Nice.
halfway there. Yeah.
Our the drummer Wetzel, he also shoots
Oh
a
no
little bit.
shit.
Yeah, and he's kind of who got me into guns.
Really?
But
Okay.
yeah, he
So wait, so this is like a new development in your life then. This isn't like a going back to your childhood necessarily. This is new.
Yeah, I always kind of liked guns. Like I was always super interested in them, and then I did like I loved history. I did Civil War reenacting and Revolutionary War
Oh,
reenacting in
nice.
Virginia. So I was always super interested, always liked them, but I didn't buy my first gun until like 2017, I think, 2016 or 2017.
What was it?
It was a Smith and Wesson M&P Shield.
Same. That was my
Yeah.
that around that time. Yeah, 2016, 2017, it was a Shield 9mm. And it was because the store was out of the Glock 43.
Bang.
My brother, when we moved out, he bought one and he's like, "I have a gun, it's in the house, you should know about it." And I was like, "Yeah, 'cause I want one." And went back to the same shop and they're like, "We can get one, but it'll take a week." And I was like, "Well, fuck, I want one now." So I bought the Shield and I fucking hated it. I was not good at shooting it at all.
Dang. I
Yeah,
didn't mind it.
yeah, I don't
It
know.
was so small, like
That's the
I didn't
problem for me.
yeah, same. That now I like I'll carry like a Glock 45 or a Glock 17 like every day 'cause I just don't care about carrying something too small that doesn't feel good in my
Yeah.
hands.
I like the 43X. That's what I've been carrying, but I
Yeah.
alternate between that and a 19, honestly.
Yeah. The
Yeah.
43X feels good in your hands, in
It's
my
yeah, I mean the
hands.
grip length and everything, it's a little bit wider. Do you so like when you carry and stuff, does that change at all based off of like what you're doing with the band or anything? 'Cause I don't really get oddly political, but like all of my friends and relationships I built from that first part of my life in music are insanely liberal people. Good people, but politically they're really liberal. So like I can't like I remember I thought a rehearsal was going to get canceled one night when I was teaching marching band and they called me and were like, "Nope, we're just going to do everything indoors. Can you still come?" I was like, "Yeah, sure." And I like looked I remember I like looked in the mirror and I was wearing like an HRT tactical shirt with an AR-15 across the front of it. I'm like, "I need to change." And then you guys give me 10 minutes, I'll be there. Because that's really not their thing.
Yeah.
Is you experience that at all?
Yeah, I'll have like conversations, especially with like I've recently just decided like this is my thing and I'm gonna make it my thing on the internet, with like the things I post and the stuff I'm doing content for. So like well it'll inevitably come up in conversation with people, and I always just try to be as reasonable as possible with people and just let them know, like, I don't know, let them know that, like, trying to figure out how to word this, that what the thing that I always tell people, I guess, that really is kind of opens their eyes a little bit is there's evil in the world, and evil has a gun. And if evil has a gun, then I need one because
Yeah.
I need to protect myself and the ones that I love at the highest capability possible. It's
Yeah.
the ultimate equalizer. And usually that kind of opens people's minds up a little bit, and they're just kind of like, okay, like, yeah, I get that. Like, I don't like guns, but like, I get that. I get why you say that. Like, I can't tell you no, like you should be a victim, like like this, I don't know. It's hard to explain. I'm trying to think of a
No,
better
I
way to
mean,
say it.
I get what you're, I mean, there are those people that are just not gun people and they don't
Yeah.
agree with it, but at least they were, there's a level of, it's like a level of like respect that like they can respect that your perspective on life and the issue is just different than theirs.
Yeah.
And of course, there's always going to be the people that like they can't do any of that and they will just sever all ties with you, right? Because they're like,
Yeah. And I
how
mean,
could you?
yeah, I mean, it's especially on the road too, when I'm talking to like other bands about it, I'm like, you see all the sketchy things that happen around us all the time. Like, we're always, if we're playing a city, it's always downtown, it's always in the bad part of the city. Like, it's
Yeah.
so I'm like, you see the things that happen every single day on this tour. Like, it could go bad quick. Like, and it changes in a heartbeat.
Do you have any stories? Like, what's the worst shit you've seen when you're on tour? Just like, 'cause I'm 20 minutes outside Detroit and I've seen some sketchy shit in downtown Detroit. Like, it is what it is. As long as you kind of just mind your own business and don't go looking for trouble, you're usually fine. But
Yeah.
like, what's if you do you have anything that sticks in sticks out?
I guess like the two things that happened that made me like say, oh, I need a gun, and like I talked to Wetzel about it, and he's like, it's yeah, you need one. Like, he already had guns he carried every day. Like, he's like, yeah, you need one. On the same tour I was on, we were if the show was over, we were leaving the show, we were just gonna walk down the street to a bar, I think in Pittsburgh. And as we were walking down the street, there was another venue that had a rap show going on. I don't remember who it was, but it was somebody who was like affiliated with the Bloods.
Oh, good.
And yeah. And as we were walking by, I heard like the distinct like pop pop and like a metallic ping, and I was like, that's gunshots. And so like I grabbed the person I was with, I threw them on the ground, and then like we got behind this car and there was like a gang shootout happening across the street from us.
No shit, man.
And we're behind the car, behind the wheel well, behind the engine block, and police run around the corner with like with their ARs. And they come to the same car we're at, and they're using that car as cover as well. And they just say like, stay down, stay down. And then when it like kind of died down a little bit, they looked at us and just said, run. And so we just ran back to our van.
Jesus.
And then on that same tour in a different city, we had a day off, and we were in Richmond, and that's where that band that I was in at the time was from. So it was just like a hometown like day off. So we went to the bars, and we left the bars, and we were walking back to a friend's house, and some dude came around the corner with his gun out and just said, give me all your money. And I was like, all right, here's $15 in my wallet, and
Dude,
took my money and
that's
left. Yeah.
wild, man. So,
Yeah. So after that tour, I was like, dang, Wetzel, maybe you are right. Maybe I do need a gun. Like,
yeah, I mean, that's I mean, I've seen some stupid shit in Detroit. I'm never that. I
and I
was
mean,
never that.
in all of those situations, I look back at it, and all of those situations that happened, like if I had a gun, I probably it wouldn't have been my place to take it out at that point. Like, my life is in danger, but if I had pulled my gun out at during like the gang shooting and the cops ran around the corner and I was a guy with a gun out,
Ooh.
like it would have been a bad look.
Right.
And then in Richmond, the guy he already had the upper hand. Like, now, like, I have the intuition to like be more of a head on a swivel and more of like looking around at everything. Like, I probably would have noticed him sooner and like been able to avoid it. But like in that situation, the way it played out, like he had the upper hand already. Like, I wouldn't have been able to get to my gun quicker than he could
Yeah, I mean, and then a lot of
act.
the in that instance too, it's like $15, dude, just take it, like
Yeah.
take it away from me. Like if that's
Yeah.
the easy diffuse, I'd take that 11 out of 10 times,
Yeah.
but I mean the point's well made. Like, yeah, paying attention to your surroundings, all that stuff, that it is way more of a skill set, I think, than people realize.
Yeah.
Just especially like I would tell anybody listening, I'm like, go to your local, I mean, they still exist, go to your local mall and watch how many people are on their phone walking around aimlessly, not
Dude.
paying attention to a damn thing.
Yeah, it's wild.
Yeah, it's the world we live in, right? Everyone's attention spans are in like seconds. We people don't pay attention to their whereabouts. And when people ask me some of those same questions and things that you were talking about, like why do you need a gun or like, you know, all that stuff, and you like can I don't want to say like you can actually tell that story, which I mean you can because you live through it and stuff. I'm not saying that everybody should have one of those experiences. I'm sure
Yeah.
most people would like to not go through that in their life,
Yeah.
but you know, the just yes, hey, look, I've been through this. Like, I know not what I'm talking about, but like, you're not going to convince me that this is an overreaction, you know? So, when did you start? Like, when you went through these experiences and decided you were going to start buying, you know, firearms, when did you start looking into training and how did that kind of all develop and start taking shape? Because looking at your Instagram, you're above just owning a firearm. I mean, you've got night vision, you got kit, you attend some of the events. Like, you're not exactly new to the scene. So how did that get started?
I'm trying to like put the timeline together. So I bought my first gun at like 2016, 2017. I know I bought like a Smith and Wesson M&P 15 shortly after that.
Same. That was my first AR,
Set that thing up with a bunch of Magpul furniture and then
Yep, standard, standard.
yeah. It's the way everyone does it. And then I started doing, I remember I'd go over to Wetzel's house at the time and we would just dry fire together and just like bullshit about everything and just hang out. And then I know I went and I was like, I want to like pick up a job at a range. Like I have some time at home. Like I wanted to get a super part-time job at the range because it seems like it'd be kind of fun. So I went and I got like the RSO certification, and so I could go do that. And then I picked up a job doing that. But I think getting into the training, because I had that certification, one of Wetzel's friends was working with AHT, Achilles Heel at the time,
Oh, yeah.
and they needed an RO just to be on site at ORD 1 year. And so I was like, yeah, I'll do it. I was like, I'll do it for free just to go and like hang
Yeah.
out, do it all day.
It's a hell of an event to just hang out at. Yeah.
So I went and did that, and then I like saw that level of training, and then I just kind of started taking classes after that. I think that was 2019. I remember it was like right around COVID because they didn't know if it was gonna like that was gonna affect it. So I think it was like
Yeah.
September of
Funny how
2019.
everyone's like time and space perception is really fucked from like the end of 2019 through most of 21.
Dude,
Like,
yeah.
it was somewhere in there. I wasn't going to work. I have no idea.
Yeah.
Drank a lot that whole time. Like,
People were talking about masks, people were wearing masks.
yeah, and ammo was impossible to find.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that year at ORD because I remember they had a company like sponsor ammo that was just like this company will have ammo available for the attendees to buy. Like so the attendees can buy ammo. This company has it for sure. I
I
remember that.
remember I went to it was, I think it's Sportsman's Warehouse. I think it was still Sportsman's Warehouse because it used to be a Field and Stream before that. But I remember it was like
Nice.
2020, like right after the onset. They started putting up signs and they would put up a new sign every time they ran out of something. Like I walked up to the door, they're like, "We are out of 9mm, we're out of 40, we're out of 45, we're out of 35-70, we're out of 308." And I was like, "Well, now I just want to see what you actually have left." And it was all, you know, like weird ass calibers and then a lot of birdshot. A lot of birdshot. Like, all right, cool. Great. Like, well, I have a shotgun. I guess I should buy a box, you know, and whatever. But it was, that was a crazy, that's a crazy time to really start getting in. And honestly, that was at mine. I'm not too dissimilar. Like, one of my first class, I think, like organized class was at Ann Arbor Arms here in
Oh,
Michigan.
nice. I've been there once. The place
It's a, it,
rules.
dude. Great place. Super
Yeah.
like and you've if you've been to indoor ranges, anybody listening, and you too, Cam, like that place is so incredibly clean by comparison. It
Yeah.
is so different. And that alone makes it just like such a comfortable atmosphere. I
They have to
took
like,
their carbine class
oh,
a couple
nice.
yeah.
They have like an amazing selection of products too. Like it's like stuff that you would actually want to buy.
Yeah, it's not like a bunch of like weird off-brand shit and then like 10% of things that you're actually interested in. Like they have showcases of flashlights and knives and optics and like name brand firearms that you're actually interested in. Like it unfortunately they're like an hour and 10 minutes for me. So it's like a special trip for me to get out there. But like I love it. I know Robbie, who's the head instructor there. I have friends that train there on the regular.
Nice.
Great place to take a class. And they host outside instructors too. Is that what you were there for? Or
Yeah, I was doing some media work for Achilles Heel at,
oh,
so
nice.
he had me out there, and so we had that like that whole back like private range that was super sick. Yeah, the place is they had that whole lounge upstairs. The place is super
Yeah.
cool.
The members lounge, they got the classroom up there and everything. Yeah, it's a sick spot. I mean, it would be nice if they had a bigger space for some of the moving and stuff, but or shooting and moving rather, but like in terms of just indoor ranges that offer that kind of thing, I've never seen anything like it.
Yeah, same.
It's
I like was amazed when I went there.
yeah, and they do a lot of good charity events and stuff too. Like I remember I went for a 9/11 anniversary event they had, and they were like donating proceeds to the Tunnel for the Towers Foundation, and they had like EOTech and Trijicon reps there because they're Michigan
Nice.
companies and stuff. I was like sick. They talked me into buying my first EOTech. All right, like cool. Like I want one. Like, well, are you ever gonna need the night vision setting? I was like, oh dude, I can't afford night vision. And then a year later, I bought night vision. So, yeah, it was a really good experience there. I love that place.
Nice. That's
And
how it always goes with night vision stuff. You're like, oh, I can't, I'm never gonna be able to afford it. And then do you like
find a way to do it. Yeah, what do you run? Because I've seen some of your photos. You've got tubes, right?
Yeah, I've got the RMVG alphas, so like the articulating ruggedized.
Yeah, those things are so Josh, one of the guys here, he's got a set of just the regular RNVGs, and those things are anything that AB Night Vision makes is completely bomb proof, like ridiculous in terms of durability.
I really wanted the ruggedized because I'm clumsy and I bonk my head on stuff all the time. So I was like, I need the ruggedized. And I was talking to a local guy here, Strategic Dark Solutions. He was like, they're just coming out with these are brand new. And I was like, articulating is also something I really want. Like, I don't want to have them be fixed. And he's like, these are coming out. It'll be a pre-order. And I was like, let's do it. And then it worked out. He actually, I ordered 20 UA, in the FDE color. And so they eventually sent him out. He got him. He opened the box and he's like, those fuckers, they sent the wrong ones. He's like, these are black. You ordered the FDE. And I was like, it's just a color. Like, it's not that big a deal. And he's like, you spent a lot of money. Like, it is a big deal. And I was like, I guess you are right about that. And then he looked at the spec sheet and he's like, wait a minute. He's like, they sent 24 UA instead of 20 UA. He's like, I would just keep these. And like, because if you return
100%.
them, they're going to send the worst ones. And I was like, yeah, I'll keep those. I don't care about the color.
Yeah, no, I mean you can get, especially now, you can get like the nylon wraps or just like the stiff wraps and stuff. You can change whatever you want about it. I shit no, for just the color. And if they're gonna go that much better in terms of what your tubes are, like nope, I will take it all day long, twice on Sundays. Hell yeah. Especially because night vision in the last couple of years has only really gotten more expensive. Like it's not getting cheaper.
And then L3 just said they were going to stop selling to the civilian market, so I know that'll
I
probably
did
change the
see that.
prices.
Yeah, the fanboys are crying in their Cheerios, that's for sure. But this is why, I have discussions with people where I'm like, hey man, you should really entertain the idea of getting into night vision. And they're like, well, I only want duals. Like, have you tried a 14? Like, have you ever tried a PVS 14? And they go, well, I really want to. I'm like, I get it. Everybody does. But I started with a 14, and like, I'll tell you, like, if I had never gotten duals, I would still love night vision. It is insanely fun, and it's not nearly the detriment. Like, I don't know if you've ever used a 14 or tried
I
like
have, yeah.
using one tube up or something. It's not as big of a handicap as people like. Is it as? No, it's not the handicap people think it is.
Not at
You
all.
know, if you have a decent laser and your tube you have is even just like a relatively good unit, you'll be fine. Just go out and learn how to use it. 'Cause like, dude, I'll tell you the first, like, it took a while. I was really bad at learning how to move with my night vision, like walking and stuff, like not on flat ground and everything was a struggle for me. Like losing that depth perception. I remember walking to, we were in Pennsylvania, for the HTA range day event, and we were camping there. We're down this valley and I'm just walking on like a gravel path, right? And Josh was with me. He was in the military, so he had a lot of experience with a 14. And this is when I just got my duals, and I'm like looking around, and I look and I go, "Hey, is this spot right in front of me? Is this a puddle?" And he's like, "Dude, it's literally just gravel." I'm like, "Are you sure? It looks wet." And he's like, "Dude, just like he walked up to me and like put his foot right down." He goes, "Dude, it's just gravel." I'm like, "Shit, man." I felt so inadequate. I was like, I need to figure this shit out. This is bad. I mean, but it kind of just highlights like people put way more value, I think, in the perception of what, it looks like versus the actual skill set and the capability that you get learning how to use it,
Yeah, I think I was very fortunate in like when I got mine, like a big portion of my friend group that I go and shoot with also got theirs at the same exact time. So we were all like new to it and learning it at the same time. So we would go out at night, we'd go on hikes in like one of the national parks, like for a couple hours, like just in the middle of the night with the night vision on, just to like get used to walking around on uneven terrain, and we just go out in the woods for a couple hours.
Dude, yeah. And A, that's fun as shit. Ain't nobody, none of your friends that have night vision, for anybody listening, none of them are going to be upset if you get a hold of them and go, "Hey, do you want to go play with the night vision?" No one's going to be, "That's gay. I'm not doing that." They're going to be like, "Fuck yeah. When, where, I like, what do you want?" Like, yes.
If I
Any and
can't do
all
it today, I can
opportunity.
do it. I can do it this day.
Yeah,
You're gonna make
I
time
mean,
for it.
let alone the opportunity to go shoot, which I mean it is more rare, right? Just because a lot of ranges don't allow night shoots and night events because of the liability piece of it, unfortunately. But and I think you're in the Ohio area, right? Yeah, so I think we had Jake Hosovar on last week with Red Light Consulting. Jake and I forget the other gentleman's name. He said they're hosting a night shoot somewhere in Ohio, some kind of some gun Southington.
Yeah,
Something.
I work with Coyote Concepts, which is like another company that Redline like does a collab with the night shoot on. So like I know Jake really well, and John is the other guy at Redline.
Oh, right. Yep. Yeah, John. Yep. Putting on that night shoot. I've only done it one time. It was a shitload of fun. We didn't even move at the one I did. He's talking about like competition stages and stuff like that. I'm like, dude, this would be that sounds awesome.
It's pretty fun. I think the last one I led a group through all the stages, and then the next one I think is March or no, February 15th. And I think we're doing the four stages again. We'll just run through them all. It's a ton of fun.
Yeah, I mean, and I just it's one of those things when I tell people like when did you get your duals? Do you remember like what year?
I think it was 2023,
Okay, so
like
it's not
maybe,
quite 2 years. Yeah. Do you regret it at all? No. Dude, nobody does. That's the thing. People like I'm trying to tell my brother, I'm like, dude, just buy one. You'll love it. Like I know when I bought my 14, I was like, man, this is a lot of money and everything. And I never looked back. Never once was I upset about it. I was like, the way I look at it, dude, like, there's people out there. Everyone's got their thing. Everyone's got their vice, right? So like some people are really into snowmobiling, especially like, up here in the Midwest. I know guys that'll go spend 2 weeks in northern Michigan snowmobiling from one side of the state and back again, right? Or some people have boats. That's just that's how they spend their time, how they spend their money. And that's fine. I know we're talking about like it's a little bit of apples and oranges, but like, yeah, a boat usually costs somewhere between 10 to 50 grand on the cheap side. Night vision on the most expensive side is usually around that 10 grand mark. So like if that's what you're into is shooting, like and you're actually into it, it's basically just an investment in yourself for your future happiness.
And it holds its value much better than a boat does.
That's definitely true. Yeah. It also
Yeah.
doesn't cost nearly as much to fix as a boat does when the motor
Yeah.
goes up. And for anybody listening, that's what I said is exactly how you should explain it to your wife. It is an investment in our future happiness together.
That's kind of how I looked at it. It was like, right, like I had some cash like set aside, and I was like, you know what, this is just like losing value. Like I can put this into this night vision unit, and it'll at least hold its value. But just sitting there as cash is just losing its value.
Yeah, I mean, we had Duncan from US Night Vision on early last year talking
Nice.
about things. And when you talk about this like valuation and stuff, like basically since the war ended and these companies aren't cranking out these tubes, you know, so lower supply, higher demand, higher price, right? So your new units are getting more expensive. And then as a result, the secondhand units are getting more expensive. Like it's not getting cheaper to get into night vision.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's a lot of people in the community that always say, well, I'm going to wait for a really good deal. And they see a really good deal and they're like, I'll grab the next one. And that really good deal is like a completely arbitrary concept, right? So like a really good deal on, I don't know, like a green PVS 14 right now might be $1,600. But in a year, that really good deal might be like 2,200.
Yeah.
And you're like, you're really only hurting yourself by waiting. And I get it. Don't like, I'm not advocating for anybody to skip a mortgage payment or something
Yeah.
to go get, you know, night vision. But if you have the ability to do it, like I'm telling you right now, like it's
It's
totally worth it.
not gonna get cheaper. It's only gonna go up. I know like all the night vision companies just raised all their prices like beginning of 2025. Like it was like put out, like it wasn't common knowledge, but like if you knew someone who worked somewhere, like they would be like, yo, all the prices are going up. If you wanna buy before the first of the year. And they
Yeah.
all went up. And
Yeah, and
there's so many ways to get into it too. Like after I bought mine, I like started looking at like the Facebook groups and all like the resale groups for it. And I was like, yo, like, and I had a friend who got dual tubes for, I think he got them for less than $1,000. And like, they're not the greatest tubes, but I looked through them and I was like, yo, for $1,000, like I'm not mad about this at all. Like there's a way to do it and like not break
Yeah.
the bank.
Yeah. A thousand. That seems really cheap
Dude,
for one.
it was wild. It was a wild deal he got.
Somebody must not have. It must have been one of them deals where like somebody got divorced and the wife sold his shit or something. Cause.
Yeah, they were older, they were green, they weren't RMBGs, but they were fixed, they weren't articulating.
Probably Sentinels then. Or at least that's the only one I know of.
Maybe.
They're
Yeah.
older. They were a fixed design.
I don't remember, but I remember he told me, I was like, yo, I have to look through these. And I looked through them and I was like, yeah, I'm not mad at this at all.
No shit. If I found that, I wouldn't even care what it was. If it, as long as it was at least Gen 2, you know, like
Yeah.
for a grand, like, yeah, man, all day.
Yeah. Yeah, 'cause
So
now that I'm like
what?
into it, I've been looking for like a spare set. And I really want a 14, 'cause they make adapters for cameras that you can basically
Yeah.
use that 14 as your lens, and I'm like, yo, that footage looks dope. So I've been like
Dude, the guys that are
passively
really good at
looking.
that, it is crazy what they're able to do through a night vision device.
Yeah, I've seen the one with the one guy, he had panos and he just had the one half of the panos, so it had like the dual circle like look through the lens. It looked really cool. That
That's
stuff's dope.
yeah. That when you're able to get to that level of like clarity, you know, so you can actually see what the picture is of, but then you can include that like the like occlusion around the edges, so you know like
Yeah.
this isn't like just a, like a color filter or anything, right? Like this is actually looking through
Yeah.
the device. It's just that much cooler.
It really is.
And I love that we're seeing more of that in the community now too. Guys are like actually going out of their way to explore the options, right? Behind photography through night vision and some of the stuff that you can do. And like things are getting cheaper. Like I think
Yeah.
you can get like a cell phone mount to line up with the 14 for like $35 or $45.
Oh, that's
So you can
cool.
actually, you know, video through them and photo through them. I mean, for whatever quality your phone's able to do, obviously there's that limitation, but
Yeah,
still
but
like, cool that you can do that.
yeah, if you have the tube and have 45, $50 or whatever it is, it's still a super cool thing. It's way easier than holding your phone up to it, 'cause that's not easy.
Yeah, and it's really hard to get now that the phones all have that autofocus built in where it's trying to be helpful, and it usually
Yeah.
goes out of its way to fuck up your shot and piss you off. It's actually really difficult. without something like that, with only, two hands, it's pretty annoying. I'll say I've tried it.
Yeah, I have to.
Yeah, like it can be done, but you're not going to enjoy it at all. So getting back to your training experience and stuff. So if you can talk a little bit about what you've done, classes or I guess, is there any like one thing that you really have a particular sort of autism for, in the training space that you like really enjoy?
I'm like transitioning, I feel like, out of a phase into a different phase, but I
Nice.
was really into like USPSA stuff and like the competition side of shooting and just like watching those like GMs and masterclass shooters just like tear it down.
Yeah.
And it is super cool and it is like still practical. That's always been my thing, is it being practical. But now, like, with doing these night shoots with Redline, I'm really getting into like white light, like, because that's the night vision stuff is super cool and it is dope, but like white light, I'm not gonna put my nods on. If I ever have to use a gun, my nod,
Oh yeah.
I'm not gonna be able to put those on. So like
No.
white light with a pistol especially, and rifle, but like white light with a pistol has been I've been I mean it has piqued my interest recently.
There's a real learning curve to it, that I think people kind of underappreciate. They jump straight to that. Well, I have night vision, so it doesn't fucking matter. Like, I have a buddy, and I know he was joking, but we had this conversation last night, and he has two PEC-15s on his rifle. And we give him a ton of shit because he's got like nice rifle. He's got a PVS 14. He's got, ballistic helmet and everything. He doesn't have a white light on his rifle. And I'm like, dude, when it's hard. He's kind of going through like a he moved out on his own and like he's going through like a lifestyle adjustment. Not like a big deal. And I don't mean to like put his stuff out there on the street or anything. But we're like, yeah, man, what do you do? We haven't really been able to give him shit lately because we know his situation. We're like, I'm not gonna like give him shit for not having one. But I'm like, dude, why don't you sell one of those, PEC 15s and like get a white light and whatever else you need? He's like, why don't you kiss my ass? I'm not selling one. I'm like, all right, so you have an emotional attachment to your night vision laser. Like, yeah, man. Awesome. But like, are you really gonna put on your night vision to shoot people and he lives in like downtown Detroit.
Oh
And
man.
I'm like, don't you think a white light would be better? He's like, nah, man, I want to blend in with that shit. I'm like, all right, cool, bro. Like, I know you're fucking
Cool,
with me, but
bro.
like you should really get a flashlight for your rifle. It would
Yeah.
move you greatly.
Yeah. And that's it's really funny. The John from Redline, we've talked about it a lot, and he's always just like the first thing people buy for their rifle is always a white light and a sling. Like, those are the two first things, because T-Rex Arm said you need those, which is you do need those.
You do.
But how often do people actually get out and activate that white light? Like that.
Not, they don't.
Yeah, which that almost never happens. And I was like, that's true. And then at these night shoots, you see it, like the wheels fall off. Like when they have to use white light, the wheels fall off. And like, people, they'll learn, like we're there teaching them a little bit, and like, oh, like, activate it, deactivate it, like maybe you need to move your button around, maybe you need to move this around. Like, we're teaching them as they're learning, but like you'll see them, like they're learning. They're like, oh yeah, like I knew I needed a white light, but like I've never used it before. Or you'll see them, like they'll fall off. Like that happens a lot too. Like the lights will just fall off. Like, yeah.
Because
The
guys never
wheels
check
literally
it.
fall off. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things when we first started getting guys in our training group to do some white light shooting. We have a buddy who has some property, and we were able to go out there. And at the time, only like half of us had night vision, so we weren't doing night vision shooting. We just did
Yeah.
low
Nice.
light, and like just getting guys to understand, like, hey, when you present your handgun, turn your light on, get your sight picture, break whatever how many shots were. I think it was two or three we were doing, right, and then shut the fucking light off. Run to the next spot and then turn the light back on. And guys like, well, once the light's on, they're gonna know where I'm at anyways. I'm like, that is the dumbest shit I've ever heard. Like, stop it. Just fucking stop. Or even, yeah, to your point about the pressure pads, like, is this really in a good enough position for me? Is it where I'm gonna be able to, maintain my C clamp on my rifle so that I can control that recoil? Do I need to move somewhere? Like, or is even, I mean, sometimes you get issues like with the mod buttons or whatever pressure pad, right? Maybe it's a cloud or something where the pad just sucks and they have issues. It's like, hey, now you know you need to fix that. Like I used to run the RMR Type 2, the one that it will auto adjust to whatever the lighting conditions are. It'll brighten or dim in that the dot of the optic for you, and didn't have any. There's you have no control over it, right? And it wasn't until that first time going out and doing low light shooting, I turned on my X300 and it completely washed out the dot, and it took what felt like 10 seconds for it to adjust. And I was like, I can't do this. Get something better. I have to. And I moved to a 509T.
Nice. John's whole thing is white light. Like that's his thing that he loves to do. And I know like he'll always set up a stage at the night shoots that like really tests your white light. Like most of the stages, like you can get by with whatever light, but like he'll set up one stage that will be like you need a powerful light to find this target. Like it'll be, I think the last one, I don't think it was 100 yards, but it was close to 100 yards away. And like you could tell like some of the stream lights weren't cutting it. Some of just the regular surefires that weren't turbos weren't cutting it. Like it was just like you needed that candela to reach out and get that information
Isn't
to
that
see
shit
the target.
wild? Like to see in the last like 3, 4 years, like how far like standard light performance has, like 1,000 lumens, regardless of candela, used to be
That was
all
it.
anybody cared about, you know? Now we're pushing, the limits are, 1600, 1800 lumens, and then 100,000 candela with like some of the cloud lights and stuff. It's insane what you're able to get for a couple $100.
Dude, yeah, I think that the Hog Light from Mod Light has like 180,000 candela or something. John has it on his SPR, and I've watched him hit steel at like 700 yards with white light in complete darkness.
I don't know if I'd be able to do that. Like the whole low light, like you want to talk about difficult, like anybody can do the low light stuff in like 10 to 15 yards. Like you want to really push limits, man. Like start reach out to try it at 50. Try it at 100, right? Just try doing the stuff at distance, and it's a very,
Wild.
very different proposition than just, drawing the gun and turning your light on. Like there's something to that. And having, the optics that can keep up with it in terms of magnification and all that. If their brightness, right, is strong enough to compete with that light, so it doesn't get completely washed out and everything. Is that, so are you pretty, do you run mod light on your stuff, or are you surefire? I know you mentioned surefire.
On my pistols, I have the X300 turbos right now. I would like to convert over to mod light. I do have on my the main rifle I use, it's a mod light 18650, with the OKW head. The turbos on the pistols are they're sweet. I just would like to have, I don't know, I like to have everything be the same. So like all of my rifles and all of my pistols, I like set them up exactly the same. So like whichever one I grab, like it all feels like the same gun. Like I can run it the same as I run all the other ones. So I like to have consistency with everything on my guns.
I just went through that with American Defense sent me a 13.9 upper, and I had tried running like the cloud lights have like their proprietary pressure pad, which I don't actually mind it, in terms of how it's set up and everything. And then I put a laser on it, so I got like the angled pressure pad that Unity makes, and like I ended up like buying another light, or building like an Arisaka light to put on it, and getting the dual Surefire pressure pad that I have on my 11.5 inch SBR. And just for the exact same reason, I want it to be set up exactly the same, so if I'm running night vision, regardless of which rifle I grab, like I know where the button is for white light, I know where it is for the laser, it's going to feel the same, and there's that continuity between platforms, so that I can just be more consistent.
Yeah, that's the smart way to do it.
I mean, if guys want to do it differently, between each rifle, that's fine. I just think you put yourself at, I would say you put yourself at a training disadvantage. Like having to think about that slows your reaction speed. Maybe not a lot, but why give yourself that extra bit of work and mental processing, if you don't have to, like,
And
why not?
it might not like give yourself that little disability, like after you've been on the range for 30 minutes or an hour, but like it definitely does from the moment you've picked up the rifle, like that very moment to the first shots, like you're kind of like learning this new thing in your hands. But if like they're all kind of set up the same, it's the same every time. Like you've picked that rifle up a million times, no matter what rifle it is, if it's set up the same. The grip is the same, where the buttons are placed is the same.
Yeah, it's just removes one variable, which, I'm assuming, because I've never been in a life or death situation or a gunfight or anything, but I'm assuming that you would want less
Yeah.
variable in the situation. You want it to be set up exactly, and I do the same thing on my pistols, right? So X300s with the how the paddle shifter from Emissary Development that kind of like lifts up the paddle so you can
Yeah,
activate it more easily.
I've seen that. I've wondered how it was.
Oh, it's I won't run the X300 without it. I think
Oh,
it's
okay.
phenomenal because I don't use the momentary. I just if I want the light on, I flip it on, and if I want it off, I'll turn it off. And with that, once I got over my initial fear of breaking the damn thing installing it,
I have
which
heard the install is crazy.
it's they do a good job with it. They send you this weird like a hex bit that you would put in like a magnetic screwdriver,
Yeah.
and it's got like a channel cut out of the middle of it, so it's kind of like a two-prong fork that you like stick between the body of the light and like the plastic tab on the switch, and they just like tell you to like slowly wiggle it off. And as long as you take your time with it, it just eventually comes off. And then you pop the other one on, and there's the world's tiniest set screw in there, like super fucking tiny. And they give you like a little dab of like a little thermo-sealed pouch of like rock set that you can use if you want to. I was like, I feel like this shit's gonna leak out. I'm not putting it on there. Haven't had any issues with it, but yeah, I will 110% recommend that to anybody that runs the X300.
Yeah, the X300, the switch is trash. Like that.
It could use some work.
It could
Could use
use
some
some
work.
work.
Yeah.
After like trying a mod light switch and even like the Streamlight switch. I used to run Streamlights on my pistols and like those switches were they were nice. And the Surefire switch is just so tough for some reason. The mod light switch feels more like the Streamlight switch and the Surefire
Yeah.
switch is just tough.
I like the mod light. A buddy has one. We went to the HTA event. I don't know if you've ever been on gun trips with buddies where everybody takes their shit out and puts it on the counter and everything. Yeah,
Yeah.
immediately like, oh man, is that the mod light pistol light? I've never used that. Like, start fucking with the switches and feeling everything. And for some god awful reason, he carries a 1911. So I was like, wow, this is really fucking heavy. Why do you carry this? But I like the light. And that was my first time playing with a mod light. I was like, I actually really like this. To me, it's kind of a nice, it's a nice blend, I think, between the two. They're
Yeah.
not insanely long tabs like what I feel like the Streamlight has,
Yeah.
but it's not nearly as difficult to activate because I know exactly what you're talking about with the X300.
Yeah.
We have to fight with that bitch every time, and that's like I said, the paddle shifter helps, gives you a little more leverage on it, and
Yeah.
again, a more pronounced ledge that you can get your thumb on. It's
Yeah.
kind of nice.
Yeah, 'cause
I recommend it.
I've gotten to the point with the Surefire, like with their momentary on system, you have to change like your whole grip. And like
Yes.
I don't want to sacrifice my grip because to me grip is like
It's everything.
the number one thing with shooting. So I'll just activate it all the way on, like out of the holster, we'll activate it totally on, leave it on, do what I have to do, and then turn it off and then go back to holster. Like
Yeah.
I won't even mess with the momentary on it anymore.
And I think that was an issue at one point with the mod light stuff. Like they didn't have momentary and
They
people
don't
were
have momentary and people are
yeah,
upset
people were
about it.
freaking out. Yeah. And
Yeah.
at the time I was like one of those people. I was like, well, why would you not have that? It seems so simple. Streamlight and Surefire have it. But I had never done any low light shooting. So contextually, I had no basis for comparison.
Yeah.
Once I actually did it, I was like, yeah, I could see this. I just want the light on and I want to maintain a good, like you said, a good grip on the gun so I can be accurate. And then if I need the light to come off, I'll just flip it off. Now, I mean, if you really need it momentary for whatever reason, like just buy one of the other ones. It's not that big a deal. Like
Yeah.
people freaked out and I didn't really get it, but Now I do. I understand. I think the rationale behind why they designed it the way that they did, it makes so much more sense to me. So what do you have planned for the rest of, because I mean we're basically the beginning of February. What do you have planned for the rest of the year in terms of like your training, any classes or anything like that that you got your eye on that you're trying to get out and take care of this year?
Let me see. We were just talking about one in the group chat the other day.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Not that one. So many group chats.
Such a pain to be popular.
Dude. Rob Vogel is coming to Ohio.
Oh,
And it's
yeah.
actually on it's on this it's at the same range and on the same day as one of the night shoots that we're doing. So we're like, yo, I think Jake was like, yo, why don't we just take that class before we do the night shoot? And I was like, it's not a bad idea.
I
So I'm,
yeah, I mean, you save on the travel and everything, like that's
yeah.
a good idea.
So I'm thinking about taking that one. That's the only thing I've really seen so far. I really haven't been looking. I've just been kind of going to the range with friends and shooters that are better than me and just trying to be better. So like
Yeah,
I'll,
that's the goal, I think.
yeah.
You know, like I feel like some guys don't like doing that. They don't want to be surrounded by guys that are better than them because it makes them feel
Yeah.
inadequate.
I get it. Yeah.
I mean, like, how else are you gonna get better, man? Like, I don't know if you've ever had a range day with people that you're surrounded by people that are like not like a little worse than you, a lot worse than you. You aren't gonna get better that way.
No, it's definitely it is a cool experience because I like helping other people too. So like
Oh yeah,
it is
for sure.
cool to like go to the range like that with those people, but like also you need to go with people that are better than you. It's like anything. You have to go with someone that's better than you. The gym is the same way. Like if you have a gym partner who's stronger than you, he's gonna push you better than you can yourself.
Yeah, I mean, and they're going to help you stay accountable, you know, stuff like that. And to your point, like the community piece is huge. Helping people that want to get better, like that's, you know, definitely a part of the equation and the discussion. But yeah, I mean, you should want as somebody who's seeking, right, to get better at this and be more capable. Yeah, you want people that are better than you. You want to learn from them. You want to pick up, you know, because they've been where you're at. And they know where you're going. So you, I mean, why would you not want to pick their brain, see what was, you know, hey, what worked for you? What should I avoid so I don't waste my time? Like if I could figure out, you know, if I, 'cause I feel like I didn't really even fully understand my grip for the first like 3 years I was shooting. You know, if I could get that time back, like I would do some awful things to get that time back. Like I just would, you
Yeah,
know,
I feel it. I feel like
figure out sooner.
that's a good life, a life thing in general is to like be around people that are better than you, like at everything, because that's how you learn and how you get better.
Yeah, there was a I don't know if you ever listened to like the Fieldcraft Survival podcast or anything back in the day.
I remember that, but I don't think I listened to it much.
Yeah, I when Kevin Owens was on, and I reference this all the time on here, so people listening are probably rolling their eyes again. Kevin Owens had a quote. He just said, you know, you can carry a gun or you can carry an ego, but you can't carry both.
Dang, I
And
like
like
that.
I try to keep that like in the back of my brain all the time. Like just like be humble and like look for the feedback. Like look for ways to get better, even if that means that you have to have like that hard internal conversation with yourself. Like and just so you're not as good as you thought you were. Like and the same thing with music. Like honestly, I was one of the better musicians in my high school. And when I started competing out of high school in I mean technically the group I was in was world class was what they called it, so it was the highest classification that I could seek out, and immediately stepped into, you know, being in an environment where I was surrounded by college level musicians that were vastly better than I was and more mature mentally. Like it's not you sh I mean everyone should seek that out. It's not comfortable, but that's how you know you're growing, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's definitely not comfortable, but the result is worth it.
Yeah, I just you get it. The way I used to look at it was like, if I'm the worst one in the room, then as a group, I have the most control over how good we are. And I think that perspective on it, if more people looked at things that way, I think they'd be a lot happier with where they're at. And I'm not saying that just because I figured that out, but like in general, I think, people talk about being in training groups or wanting to like CQB training and stuff like that, learning structure clearance and working as a team. If you're the worst guy in your crew, that means that you can control how good you guys are. Like, it's actually kind of a cool thing when you shift your perspective, as long as you're obviously carrying like your end of things and not just being a little lazy ass.
Yeah, that is a cool way to look at it. I haven't thought of it like that, but
Have
that
you
is cool.
done any of that, like any CQB or like team-based training, anything like that?
I've taken one CQB thing, and it was a class put on by like a friend of a friend who has he does some cool guy stuff.
Cool
He's
guy
not really
stuff.
he's not really public about it, so but
That's
he
fair
does
enough.
he does some cool guy stuff. So I took one from him, and it was like he did it for free for because he's not allowed to like teach classes. So he did it for free as like he's like, this isn't a class, this is a discussion.
This isn't a class. Nobody call a class, I'll get fired.
So he did it for free at a church for church security. And like the church environment, like the church that it was at was a super cool, it was a terrible environment to have to do CQB in, which like is a good learning experience. But it was cool, and he wants to do those kind of more often. So I think we're gonna get together, I think later this month. Probably a few dudes, maybe six or eight dudes are going to get together with him, and we're going to go to a shoot house and do some more work with it.
See,
But
that's awesome. Like, those opportunities are few and far between, honestly.
I'm very blessed with that, especially like that, and then like having Southington Hunt Club where we can shoot at night. Like there's so many things here that are super cool.
People don't realize until they actually like start digging into the community and you start looking into investing in yourself with your training, right? Like, just saying that there's a gun range near you does not mean you're going to be able to do everything you want to do. Like, indoor ranges, I mean, we spoke about how good Ann Arbor Arms was, but like, that's not the standard. Your
No.
standard is like, there's a place, I'm not going to say the name because I don't want to like bash the business and like whatever. But there's a place about 15 minutes from me. It's an old shitty place that has like five stalls in their lane. You walk in there, this place, it looks like they may have ammo on the shelves from the 70s. And
Dang.
it stinks like stale piss in there. And the trolleys that you hang the targets from are like just like pieces of like rebar that they bought from Home Depot. I'm
Man.
like, and like binder clips. I'm like, this is fucked, dude. How much did I just pay to come in here and shoot? So just having a gun range by you is not enough, and even just having an outdoor range by you, a lot of those places will only allow like skeet or one round per second. Like, you can't rapid fire or draw from a holster because of liability. So like, finding those good environments, man, it is. And I've never been to Southington, but from what Jake was saying, it's a nice place with a lot of good opportunities. May have to put that on the list of places to check out.
It's a sweet location. Everyone who's like into shooting, like to the level we are, maybe a little below, like has seen pictures of people at Southington. Like it's an iconic view. The one range has like that big rock wall, and like I'm sure you've seen
Oh,
plenty of pictures.
is that where they do ORD at? Oh shit. Okay, yeah. No, I guess I have seen the giant rock wall. Yep, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yep. I always say like everyone has seen pictures. If you like
Yeah,
watch YouTube videos about shooting, you've seen pictures.
you just don't know that you've seen it, right? No, that
That's
is awesome.
Southington. Yeah, they've got that one big range. They've got another range that's to the left of it that has a rock wall backstop. And then they've got, I think, four pistol bays, and they've got a 700-yard like long range, and then they have a 1,000-yard. But to do the 1,000-yard, they have to shut down a couple of the other bays because the rounds go over. those bays. And
Ours
I've
does
got.
that too. But when we do it at ours, it only ma it maxes out at 600, and they have to close. They have to close. There's like 20 bays total, 19 or 20 bays total, and they have to close like eight of them
Oh my goodness.
to open it up out to 600 yards. And it's like a special event they do once a month, which is still worth it. I think it's either next weekend or it's the day after Valentine's. So as long as I take care of my wife on the Friday, I can go out first thing at Saturday and go shoot.
Nice.
It's just like, you know what I mean? Like you can bullseye all you want indoors, but until you actually get outside and have to deal with wind and shoot out past 200 yards, like it's pretty cool.
It's definitely cool to try to reach out and touch things.
For sure. For sure. It's one of my goal items this year is to do more with that. Like last year they finally got me shooting out. Like I've been shooting for a while. I just never really wanted to shoot out to like 100 or further. And Josh got me to do it, and I liked it and enjoyed it way more than I thought I would. Just understanding like, barrel twist and your ammo and the like a lot of it was that I really hated the zeroing process. Like I wasn't good at it. I didn't really fully understand it. It took me forever. I always felt super embarrassed about it. So I was just like, I'm good. He's helped me a lot in terms of like kind of like coming out of my shell in that regard and being more confident in understanding it. It's a shitload of fun. It's definitely something I want to do more this year.
Yeah, it's definitely fun. The bug didn't really bite me the way it's bitten a couple of my friends, but I do find it enjoyable and fun.
Well, and it's just you can without spending a ton of ammo at the range,
Yeah, that
you
is
can
also
still get some.
nice.
Yeah, I mean, with prices and everything, it's like Jesus.
Yeah.
Thankfully, Palmetto, I think the AAC stuff is decently priced, and they have good sales pretty frequently. But like, yeah, ammo prices right now not the greatest. So, if there's an opportunity to shoot while not spending, hundreds and hundreds of rounds, I'm about it. But man, this has been awesome. I appreciate you making the time. I really, really enjoyed the discussion. If people are looking for you online, if you wouldn't mind, if you can like put out your Instagram or where they can find you.
My Instagram is at CVMERON underscore PERRY. So Cameron underscore Perry, but the A is a V because someone else took my full name.
It took me way longer than it should have to realize that that's what the V was. I was like, why is it CV Marin? Like, what is what? And I was like, oh shit, damn it.
It was like a super trendy thing back in, like, dude, I don't know, 2013 or 14, like, to replace the A's with V's. So I was like, I'm just gonna do this because someone else already has it. But yeah, that's
Seems like a very MySpace thing to do. Was the trend when I was in high school and MySpace was like coming to its end, but people were still doing dumb shit like that. I'm like, yeah.
the MySpace days. But yeah, that's my Instagram.
Yeah, I mean, if you guys have questions that you guys can find Cam, check out what he's doing. But man, I really appreciate this. This was a cool conversation. This is unlike anything I've been able to do before for the pod. Hopefully we can do one again in the
Oh
future.
yeah, I'm down.
And
This was fun.
yeah, good times, man. Well, stay safe out there, and we'll be in touch, man.
Hell yeah, you too, man.
I promise, I actually did not realize that Cam's story and background had as many parallels to my own. I didn't. I mean, kind of creepy, almost. First purchase was a M&P Shield in 9mm. First AR was also the M&P Sport, which that is the exact same. The exact same set that I purchased for myself. There were a couple. I thought it was like a full size M&P and a shotgun in between those two for me. But I mean, whatever. It's still pretty funny. but that was a cool conversation, guys. Like, I know a lot of you have different backgrounds in life, and it's always really interesting to see and experience with people around you in the community, right? Where you run into somebody who works in the same industry or maybe, lives in the same area and you just have never crossed paths with them. Actually, for as long as I've been doing this, so about 5 years almost, which is crazy to say out loud, And for as long, probably the last 3 years at least, that I've been trying to connect with people locally here, I am still finding and discovering individuals who are within less than half an hour of me, who train, who want to be better, who are looking for outlets and connections. It's just mind-boggling how large the world can be, and then simultaneously at the same moment how small it really can be. And this was a cool conversation. It just shows you know he's in Ohio, which my disdain for the state of Ohio is well documented, to say the least. I mean, we just had Jake on last week. Jake's from Michigan and lives in Ohio, knows Cam, which is crazy, right? I didn't realize that. Otherwise, I probably would have brought this week's discussion up with him when I had him on the pod last week. But small world, as you get older, it gets, it gets a little bit smaller each day, I guess. Really enjoyed hearing his story, some of those experiences that he brought to the discussion around the life-threatening experiences, both the shootout that he talked about and being robbed at gunpoint, right? Those are things that many of us talk about in reference to why we would want to carry a gun, why we do carry firearms, and why we seek out actual training. For many of us, it's pontificating. It's which it's not really the word for it. It's ideation. It's fantasy, right? We've never been at gunpoint. We've never had gunshots exchanged around us in a violent manner that way, right? And we've never had a gun pulled on us. For many of us, that's the reality. And good. Like, I think that's everybody's goal, right? Is to go through life without having a gun pointed, at them. But for Cam, it was a reality. Not once, but twice in the same trip. And that it's crazy the way the world is out there. And that when we start looking at different walks of life, how none of that shit ultimately matters when it comes down to it. Regardless of your political ideology, the color of your skin, your belief system, whatever, right? When bad shit happens to you, because there's, like, and Cameron said it, right? There is evil in this world. We've talked about that in this podcast before. We've talked about the reasoning behind why so many of us go out of our way to train and be capable and be better prepared, be smarter, be stronger, right? There's evil in this world, and it manifests itself in many ways. And it doesn't matter who you are, where you come from, doesn't matter what you believe, it doesn't matter what you do, at some point or another, it finds you. And it's terrifying that that's the kind of stuff that can happen. Now, luckily here, obviously, Cam is here to tell us the story about it, and it's good to hear that that's how things worked out for him, and that now he's able to share that story with people, and hey... it happened to me. I'm not just saying this because a lot of people do. Like, a lot of people come from affluent areas. They got too much money and they buy a bunch of guns and gear. And they just say, well, this could happen to me. I mean, that's me. I didn't really come from an affluent family or anything, but I'm just saying I've never been in that situation. That's what I said on the recording, right? But actually, having been through it and choosing, making the choice to not want to be a victim, basically, right? To be accountable for yourself and accountable for your own safety. And so it's paramount when we're looking at what we talk about here on Prepared Mindset, is taking your own safety in your own accountability, right? Taking that in your own hands and doing something with it. It's remarkable. It's fantastic. It's super cool to hear that somebody with his skills and background and story and everything, this is what happened. This is what he did with it. And then obviously we nerded out, right? Like, I was telling him after we finished recording, we got off the air, like, I didn't think we were going to spend time talking about weapon lights and stuff like that, but we did. It's awesome. He knows Jake and John at Redline Consulting. We have some common friends in the industry, or in the community, rather, I should say. It's really cool when you can find somebody even semi-local, a couple hours away from you, right? Yes, in Ohio, but that is involved with this and has the tools, the capability, and the passion, the drive, the determination, right? To do better, to be better, to want to do more for themselves and for those around them, quite frankly. So I really, I got a lot out of this. I enjoyed it very much, and I am looking forward to being able to bring Cam back on for a follow-on discussion sometime in the future. I know with touring and things like that, obviously there's some scheduling that has to be done with that, but really, really good talk. really enjoyed myself. I hope you guys really enjoyed it too, more importantly, right? That's why we do it. So thank you guys so much for sticking around to this point. If you're still listening, we appreciate the hell out of you. Make sure you guys hit the subscribe. Make sure you hit the follow. Go check out our YouTube page, man. We're actually doing, I would say we're blowing up, but we're actually doing pretty well. We've doubled in size in the last 90 days because we kind of figured out a few things and started being a little more committed to our behaviors. And, you know, the stuff that they tell you, if you do it, you'll be successful. We actually did it, and we're being relatively successful. but appreciate all the support, you guys. Thank you so much for listening and checking this out. We have another couple great episodes lined up over the next few weeks here. Make sure to stay tuned for those. But that is all I've got. Jesus. I apologize, you guys. It is rough getting to the end of these. That's all I got for you guys this week. That's a wrap on this week's discussion. Stay safe out there. And until next time, everybody, Like I always say here, work hard, train smarter, and be prepared.